Hey there, Bob Boylan here. I've been doing this show, All Songs Considered, for 18 years, and I've never once asked you to donate. So this is it. This is the time. This is the month we're going to do this. When you support your local station, you help NPR create new programming, you help support the ones you love. So just do it. donate.npr.org/allsongs. Just go there. donate.npr.org/allsongs. Yes, do it. I'm Bob Boylan with a Plus One podcast from All Songs Considered today, a conversation with Mike Milosh. Back in early 2013, a quiet-sounding record took many of us by storm. That album was called Woman. The artist was Rai.
I'm a fool for that shake in your thumbs. I'm a fool for that sound in your slums. I'm a fool for your belly. I'm a fool for your love. I wanna make this play. Oh, I know you're faded.
There was a mystery sounding, the soft sounding bedroom album. In fact, I remember seeing Rai at South by Southwest that year and fully expected a woman to step up to the microphone and sing, only to see Mike Milosh, the brains behind this music, behind the microphone. Rai was known as a project by both Mike Milosh and Robin Hannibal. But for the past nearly 5 years, we heard nothing more from Rai beyond the tireless touring as a band, minus Robin Hannibal. Now, 5 years after the album debut, we finally have a new Rai record. Today, I have a conversation with Mike Milosh and thrilled to announce, finally, a new album. It's called Blood. I guess the place to start is, like, where have you been? A lot of live shows.
Ironically, yeah, I mean, a lot of live shows. My last count, which was the other night, was 476 live shows.
Whoa.
I was kind of constantly touring.
It's like 80 a year.
Yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot of live shows from the very first time I played to last week in Jakarta. A lot of the shows have been in Europe and in Asia, like Turkey, played in Israel, South America. Played a lot of shows, and I wanted to be free from the concept of album cycle, and I just kind of wanted the live show to be its own entity. And I put new songs into the shows, I took them out, I tried songs, played them for a while, took them out, so people heard songs they didn't know, they were unfamiliar with. I converted some of my old Milosh songs into Rai tracks. Especially this one song called It's Over. I would end the night sometimes with It's Over, and I'd do this a cappella version of that song with no amplification. And I did it at Walt Disney Hall in front of, like, I don't know how many people are there, but 2,000 people, and zero amplification. And I know it was a really incredible experience doing that.
People don't get that, right? Yeah. I mean, you never get that just the voice into your ear. It's always microphone, wire, amplifier, speaker.
And speakers, yeah. And there's something special about getting about 2,000 people to be quiet enough that you can sing with no amplification in a huge room and have people hear it. It's quite a powerful and beautiful feeling. I have to admit, there's multiple times where I've almost started kind of crying from being overwhelmed by it. So it's hard to get to the end of the song. But it's very... I don't know, had a very profound effect on me being able to accomplish that feeling.
One of the reasons we started doing Tiny Desk concerts and we don't amplify, you'll know when you come, right? is that we don't amplify the voice into the room. And so, although we capture everything with microphones, it makes the performers have to perform at a level no louder than the singer can sing. And so you get an intimacy, and also everybody who's in the room watching you hears just your voice, which is such a rare experience.
We've been listening to voices for the last couple thousand years with no amplification, and it's probably only in the last 70. And it's interesting, we keep removing ourselves from being human beings. And amplification, it's very necessary in a live environment, but when you get back to just what the voice is and I think that's when you get like to be really touched, you know. For me, this record, I found it very important to play it all live and to have no cheating, no grid, essentially, no placing samples of really cool sounding drum machines. But I don't know, I kind of perfected the hand clap for this record as well. I've got the perfect volume now for the hand clap that feels warm but still kind of cuts in the mix.
Is there a song that illustrates that I can play?
Yeah, I guess Count to Five.
All right, let's play a little of that.
I'm all out of place. It's raining on this race. You're all out of place, my babe. It's written on your face. Bring your songs to me. I'm not afraid to hear them. Bring your songs to me. I'm not afraid to hear them. You kept me waiting. I'll count to five.
So are each of the hand claps real, or did they're not sampled and then you hit them, right?
Yeah, no, they're real. Like, yeah. I'm playing along. Right. I'm clapping. In that song, it's me and Itai clapping along with.
And who is Itai?
The chorus. He's the bass player that I wrote the song with.
I see.
He's my bass player. He plays live.
And who else is on this song?
On this song, it's me on drums, me on Whirly Rhodes and the synths. Itai's on bass. He does one of the synth lines. And then I've got Thomas Lee playing violin and viola. And Nate Mercero on guitar when the guitar comes in. And then Itai's on guitar as well.
This is a project that for a long time you and Robin Hannibal did together, and his name's not there.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing. Robin was involved less than people realize in that we made the first Woman record together. I mean, it was a bedroom record that we did very quickly in a bedroom studio. And he kind of backed out of the project at that point. And when I signed the project to Polydor, I mean, he wasn't involved at that point. So there's this one misconception is that he was part of the band, and he actually really wasn't. He hasn't played a single show with us live.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, the live show originally intended was I was going to do 9 shows live. And so I put together this band, played those 9 shows, and then we just kind of kept playing. And then I kept getting these lovely opportunities that I couldn't say no to. And I just kind of followed that and just kind of rode that wave for about 4 years of playing live.
Do you two touch base, try to make music? Because you did, I mean, this record's impeccably beautiful. And the record you did in 2013 is beautiful. Seemed like a successful partnership in some way, though I don't know exactly the roles.
I guess when he took himself out of the situation, the project just evolved on its own path. Mm-hmm. And this new record is very much, it's come from a place of playing so many shows live and then having experiences over the last 4 years that are some very positive and some negative and some difficult, and all those things fell into what is this record. And yeah, I mean, I haven't actually talked to Robin in about 4 years or something like that.
I'm trying to imagine how these songs come to you, and they're all so fragile. They seem, it feels like you have this desire to make a certain sound. And I almost imagine that sound is in your head before you even lay it down. But I'm just guessing.
I think that I don't intellectualize that part of the process very much. I like it to be very intuitive or subconscious almost. What happens to me is something happens in my life and it'll be very affecting. It'll, you know, be very poignant for me. And it just stays in me. And I feel an absolute compulsion to create a song about it. I mean, I've thought about it and I almost think that it's like a therapy for me or something, writing music. It allows me to go through the emotions. It's not just like a journal entry, even though that's an easy way to put it. It's about riding through the emotions, coming to terms with things. Also, sitting in the happiness of certain things for a while as well, which I really love that feeling of relishing, you know, happiness. And I guess that's how it happens. Just an experience happens and it makes me feel like I have to make a song about it.
I'm going to play a song called Please. Opening lines, if anybody didn't catch it, was, I think you heard me wrong, I hear your eyes, I think it came out wrong, pillow of lies. The person who, if it was an incident that happened that made you want to do this, have they heard the song?
Yes. It's actually my girlfriend, Genevieve.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love that that's just a, I always wonder about people who write songs about whatever happened to them in their life and all the awful things or the relationship breakups. And there is a person usually on the other end of this. And I always wonder, what is the reaction? Like, first of all, how anybody, and I'll ask you this and you can answer or not answer, but how anybody could write a song knowing that it is for somebody and that person's going to hear it. I'm way too self-conscious for that. Right? So how do you do that?
I don't know.
A lot of these are just inner thoughts, but for you, they're not. They're public thoughts. I mean, they were.
There's a tough place there. I think you almost have to just shut off a part of what's, you know, to come, which is people are going to hear it. And when you're making it, I'm like, this song is basically, I was kind of mean to Genevieve. We were headed to New York and we got in this tiff and I was just kind of, I don't know, I think I was stressed out and I just was kind of rude. I don't generally like being rude. And I felt really bad about it. And the entire flight was kind of tense between us from LA to New York. And we were going to go do this ambient night there because she does these ambient nights that I perform at. And we don't call it Rye, but we do these very, very stripped down ambient things that are very vocal in nature. And so we had to do this project together. And, you know, there was this tension. And I'm not also very good at apologies, which I wish I was better at them. And this song basically is me apologizing to her. So we landed in New York. I had a couple days there and I met up with my friend Thomas Bartlett, who has a studio in New York. And he did that song with me.
Some people know Thomas from his project Dove Man that we've played. And Thomas is produced so many great pieces of music, works a lot with Nico Muley, Anyway, go on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a really tender soul. Yes. And what's incredible about Thomas is that when I'm writing with him, his whole point is to allow me to be the most vulnerable version of me. Hmm. You know, that's his whole thing. So a song like that, it's almost like I can only write a song like that if it's going to be with another person, with someone like Thomas Bartlett, where he's so encouraging of those moments where I started crying when we were recording, and he's just like, oh my God, no, that's it. Like, let's not redo that line. That's it.
Do you remember the line, or was it even this song?
I mean, it was that song, yeah. You can hear it if you keep listening.
Okay. Let's take it to the end here.
Yeah, I mean, it happens a couple times in there, but at the very end, all this pain, I was barely able to sing it. I don't know. It's interesting listening back in this context. I remember exactly the feeling in my throat. Wow. When I was trying to sing the parts.
And you were in, were you in his studio?
Yeah, it's called the Dwelling in New York. And it's really close to Times Square. It's in the middle of the busiest part of New York, and then you go into this building and the doors close and it's just perfectly quiet and you're in this new world, and it's quite an amazing place to record. Nick Amelie's studio's next door, and me and Thomas just lock ourselves in there, and I don't know, we really just kind of delve into it.
And you can do this around other people. It still amazes me that and then take it and sing it night after night. What would be, you know, I think we did the math, 80 or 90 shows in a given year, and still feel, oftentimes at least, not, can't be every time, that emotion.
That's an interesting thing. It's not every time, but I've gotten to this place where I'm able to tap into it almost every night and get to a place where I can really live it. And one of my I'm very adamant about this, which is about when I write, I don't take very many suggestions from other people about the lyrics. Mm-hmm. And it's because I feel I have to be singing about something very specific to me. But I also know that when I get on stage, if I felt like I was using a device, or I was trying to rhyme, or it was to be clever, I don't think I could sell it, you know what I mean? And that concept of selling something is kind of gross. What I want to do is, when I'm on stage, I want to just to be in the feeling. And it's hard to relive it sometimes because some of the songs are intense.
Yeah, and every day is different too. You may have just a crap day and then you got to get out there. Or you may just be in a joyous mood and then you have to do something sad. I mean, it's that snap into emotion. And I know I've seen you and I know it's not selling, but it's... And I was going to use the word convincing, but you're not convincing, and it just is, right? If I'm making sense.
I feel really strongly that if I stop just being in it, I got to take a break or something, because if I don't want to sell anything, you know, I want to be there when I'm on stage, and it's very important that I'm that I'm in it.
One of the things that strikes me powerfully when I fell in love with the 2013 record, not knowing anything about you, was the vibe. I love records that are vibes. You put it on, the entire room changes, and you do that. And then, of course, when I saw you at Le Poisson Rouge, we broadcast a show of yours there, and I've seen you a number of different times. It just overtakes the space. And I'm wondering, do you have something in mind when you do that? Is there something that you feel that you do that conjures it? Is it either instrumentation or volume or the way instruments work together? I'd love you to talk about how you put this music together.
Yeah, I mean, I love that you used the word conjure. When I wrote the paragraph of what this album is about, actually, one of the first things I wrote was, I'm conjuring something new into my life. So it's kind of amazing that you said that. It's not a normal word to use, but...
Well, it feels that way.
Yeah, the conjuring is something very important here. It's about bringing something in to the live environment or the studio, which is very, it's like hyper real almost, you know, and the air does change. I can feel it. And if the air doesn't change yet, sometimes I even take, like, I'll be on stage and I'll be about to do a song that I know it's supposed to be a certain temperature in the room. And if it's not there, I'll take, I don't know, 2 minutes, and I'll let the musicians start playing, and I won't even sing sometimes. And I'll just wait till that feeling kind of descends into the room where the air has that perfect thickness, and then start singing. It's very hard to talk about it in words, but you know it when you feel it. And when it's there, you can kind of sit in it and embrace it, you know?
When you play into a room, I go to a lot of shows, and one of the things that ruins so many shows for me is volume. Like, you could have a great sound, but if it's too loud, I can recoil, you know, or feel like I'm putting up a defense. Is there something in the way I assume you have, well, go to every show with a sound engineer. Is there something that there's an instruction or a volume level or the bass level or anything that you aim for that helps bring that intimacy to the performance?
So here's a crazy piece of information. I actually don't bring a sound engineer, wow, front of house, or monitor guy to any show. I haven't ever.
Oh my.
I know. Everyone thinks I'm completely insane, actually.
No, I know you are, actually. Completely insane.
Yeah. No, everyone thinks I'm complete. Like, even to touch on the Sufjan Stevens thing, we opened for Sufjan Stevens at Red Rocks, and I didn't bring a sound engineer to that. And, like, the promoters were just dumbfounded that I would do that. I have this feeling like I love meeting the sound engineer that knows the room. Mm-hmm. When I get there, I talk to them. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, they know the music.
What would you say?
I just say, like, listen during sound check. This is a gentle set.
Okay.
I want a lot of dynamic here and a lot of space.
Great.
In the music. But in sound check, we kind of dial in this idea that if it's getting too loud or if it's too much bass and I'm having to compete with the bass or compete with the drums, then it's wrong. What we want is that I can sing gently and then the instruments accompany that. Mm-hmm. And that's what we achieve during sound check, which takes about 45 minutes to an hour to get to that place. But once you're there, you know it and you've got it. And I don't know. I think when you're performing live, if you're listening to the musicians, you can really tell when things are too loud. And so the other thing I don't use, and I've also been told I'm crazy, is I don't use in-ears, no matter what.
For those who don't know, so when you're a singer on stage, you don't hear the sound going out into the room on the big speakers. You have monitors, and they're usually little wedges by your feet. These days, lots of people wear, instead of having those monitors by their feet, will have basically headphones, but little in-ear headphones that they can dial in a mix that they want. Okay, now you can continue as I gave my little tech lesson.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, I kind of just assumed everyone knew.
Yeah. So what do you want to hear? And by taking out in-ears, you're hearing everything.
I'm hearing the real drum sound,
right?
I'm hearing the real bass tone coming out of the amplifier. I'm hearing the B3 coming through the Leslie speaker. I can hear everything. And I think the most important word here is air, because sound is, you know, pushing air. And in-ears, to me, it's just this artificial version of hearing it. And I want to hear the air. And that, to me, is where you can connect to the other musicians. It's in the air that's been moved. And then that air is where I can feel the dynamics between the audience and myself as well. And that's how I think we keep it quiet, but at that level that makes sense with the audience. And then as a result, the audience is usually quieter. Like, I've noticed that our shows, people don't talk very much. Mm-hmm. And if they do, people look at them and give them kind of dirty looks, and then they stop talking. That air is really crucial.
That's beautiful. Well, I can't wait for two things. One, to see this new music performed live. And then also for you to play a Tiny Desk, which...
would love to, yeah.
We're working on those dates, huh?
Yeah.
Be very cool. Thanks for doing this today. I'm going to go out on the song called Taste. And the new album, which is called...
It's called Blood.
Comes out on February 2nd. Thank you, Mike. Really appreciate this.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. Cheers.
Treat this wine from your sweet